Millions of Americans live with an irregular heartbeat or arrhythmia, the most common being atrial fibrillation or AFib. And we'll be talking about ways to detect it, possibly how to prevent it, and also what you can do if you have it. Hello and welcome to Living Well with Robin Stoloff, empowering you to live a healthier life. Joining us now is Dr. Michael Lenk. He's a cardiac electrophysiologist with AtlanticCare Physician Group Cardiology. That's a mouthful. Thank you so much for joining me. So talk to me about arrhythmias and what can cause arrhythmias, in particular AFib, the most common.
Yeah. So by the way, thanks for having me on the podcast, yeah. Robin. It's nice to be with you today. So arrhythmia is whenever the heart is not in its normal electrical sequence. There's a very specific way that the heart is supposed to work with an electrical pacemaker and wiring system that causes it to, that causes the blood to move in a certain way and the heart to pump in a specific order. And whenever anything electrically messes that up, we call it an arrhythmia. And atrial fibrillation, and of its specifically, is when the electrical organization of the upper chambers or the receiving chambers of the heart, called the atria, stop beating because the electric goes completely haywire, chaotic. It looks kind of like radio static and there's no organization at all. That causes them actually to stop beating.
How common is this? And what are some of the factors that cause AFib?
So it's very common. It's the most common arrhythmia that we have. And it increases with age to the point where at least 25% of people over the age of 80 have it. And it's probably that's an old number, and it's probably drastically underestimated, especially as we're getting better at detecting it. And there are many factors. We never quite know exactly what causes it in any one person, but we know genetics is a factor, age, probably the two greatest ones, high blood pressure, sleep apnea, thyroid diseases, blood clots to the lungs, stress, going through surgery, but cardiac and non-cardiac surgery, just to name a few.
That's quite a list there. And what are some of the complications of AFib if left untreated?
So kind of acutely, like when people go into AFib, probably the most common thing people complain about is palpitations or chest pain and shortness of breath. It can be hard to tell the difference between AFib, especially if you've never had it before, and a heart attack. And so the presentation overlaps a lot, and AFib pathways and chest pain pathways tend to overlap. And yeah, so acutely, when especially when somebody goes into it for the first time, that's pretty similar. Chronically, if people don't recognize they have it, or if they're in it for a long period of time, they can get heart failure. They can get problems with shortness of breath and fatigue. People can get what we call the tachybrady syndrome, where the heart goes too fast and too slow, and have passing out, may need a pacemaker, et cetera, and more.
So you mentioned pacemaker. What are some of the other treatment options?
We break it down into three main, we call them treatment arms. First and foremost is stroke prevention, because the atria stop beating in atrial fibrillation, there's some dead end areas that can get blood clots, and those blood clots can flick off and cause a stroke. So we give people anticoagulants, commonly known as blood thinners, to help for that. The second arm is what we call rate control, which is where we just make sure the heart goes neither too fast nor too slow. And when people have a heart rate too slow, that's usually where pacemakers come in. And the other is rhythm control. And that's where we try to get people out of AFib and back in normal rhythm. Now, in which of these, there's also a fourth arm of therapy, which is the risk factor modification, like the things we talked about, including treating sleep apnea. Whether primary rate or rhythm control is right for an individual depends on the person. For rhythm control specifically, we have something called cardioversion, which is where we put pads on your front and back and shock you back to normal rhythm under anesthesia. Okay.
like in the movies when you see.
Yeah, kind of like in the movies, but a lot less dramatic.
Rise off the table.
Yeah, not really. It's actually kind of boring. It's a very
wouldn't
good
make the movies.
But that wouldn't make for real life, seldom makes for a good movie.
Yeah.
And then the other are what are called antiarrhythmic drugs, which are medications that try to keep a person in normal rhythm, as opposed to just keeping the rate down. And
sure.
Then the third,
do they have complications though? Side effects? Often most medications have something.
So yes, all drugs can have some side effects or complications. And again, we tailor those to the individual. And the other way for rhythm control is through ablation strategies.
Yeah, talk to me about ablation. A friend of mine is going in for ablation very soon. And, you know, she's a little nervous, but I think it's a fairly common procedure and usually with great results. Mm-hmm.
Specifically for AFib or for a different rhythm?
Yeah, for AFib.
For AFib, okay. Mm-hmm. So ablation in general is when we use an energy source to cauterize or to basically scar over or deaden tissue. So you might hear people talk about burning or freezing, and that's kind of what it is. That just sounds a little dramatic. But it takes a very small amount of the heart tissue and converts it from muscle into a scar. Now, that's not nearly enough to make the heart stop beating, and it's not nearly enough to create injury to the heart. What it does, but scar acts as an insulator. So anywhere you put a scar, electric will no longer flow. So for what our main goal for AFib is actually to separate the parts of the heart that can cause fibrillation and keep them isolated or separate from the rest of the heart. And usually that's the four big blood vessels that bring all the blood back from the lungs called the pulmonary veins. We make a whole series of ablations right at that boundary in order to separate the electric flow. And
multiple, so basically kind of stop the electric flow from that part of the heart. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay.
And there's probably at least four hypotheses as to why it works. But if you take all of these theories and you lay them on top of each other, they all use that spot in the heart. And so that's why that's our bedrock. Like over 90% of the goal is to get that.
And how successful is this type of surgery?
We quote people a durable remission of at least 85% from this. And some people we get more, some people we get less. There is variability to it. You'll hear people say that there's variability to it. In general, the earlier we get to people and the earlier in the disease state, the better the results.
That's with almost any disease or condition, if you find it early, and that's why it's important to stay on top of this. Use a smartwatch. I know people are able to detect it now through a smartwatch. What do you think of that, and how useful is it?
So I think the smartwatch is actually a really neat tool. There's two main ones. I mean, we don't know, you know, brand loyalty. We're not sponsored by any brands. There's one that you can put your fingers on. It's called a cardiomobile, and that will store actual EKGs and can tell you if you're in AFib. And then the other are smartwatches. I mean, the Apple Watch specifically carries an FDA labeling for that and actually has a fairly good algorithm for detecting it. And we do see people that come in that have smartwatch detected AFib, and there are ways these devices can be fooled, but they're generally quite accurate. And if it tells you that you're likely in AFib, it's definitely worth getting it checked out.
That's amazing, really. I mean, it is putting it back on the patient in a way to monitor themselves, which is terrific because you can't be with somebody 24/7. So if they're just wearing their smartwatch and they're alerted, they can take care of it right away without having to wait or go to the doctor's office. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. I agree with you. And on top of that, you know, a lot of patients complain that they have palpitations on and off. They have something's not right. And it can be very hard to capture what's going on in that moment. But if the patient has the smartwatch or has the cardio device at their disposal, they can take their EKG. And sometimes that's the only diagnostic tool the patient has after years of workup.
Very, very important. So hopefully now we just got a bunch of people to go out and buy some new smartwatches or cardiac mobile. Not no. Sponsored, we want to say.
Not sponsored, just stating facts and FDA.
Very important though. So let me ask you this, and we're talking about that subject. Is there any way to prevent AFib?
That it's a very good question. Probably the best way to prevent, in some cases, the answer is no. And I'll just have to be honest with you that we see it run in families, and it's like trying to stop the aging process. It's going to happen to people kind of no matter what. However, similar to how we talk about preventing coronary disease, right? We can't prevent coronary disease in everybody, but by having a heart healthy diet, exercise, you know, taking care of trying not to be a diabetic or taking care of diabetes, taking care of things like sleep apnea, weight loss. You know, we see, you know, we're referring a lot more people directly for weight management and even bariatric because it makes a big difference. And sort of we're better, overall, we call that cardiometabolic health. The better mm-hmm. cardiometabolic health a person has, in addition to the lower risk of coronary heart disease, there's also a lower risk of AFib.
Of course, smoking, and I don't know if vaping now plays a role in that, but any yep. habits like that?
Smoking, alcohol, you know, a lot of street drugs. The cannabis is a bit of a gray area, but I tend to include cannabis as well in that.
Isn't that crazy? Because now it's legal and people think, oh, it's no big deal. But, you know, it does affect our body. Anything you put into your body affects your body.
Yeah. And well, think about tobacco is legal. Alcohol is
yeah.
legal.
Yeah, exactly.
Do at least exactly. as much harm. So just because something's legal, you know, drain cleaner's legal, but you shouldn't drink. You know, it's like that. So you have to use common sense with how you take care of your body.
Absolutely. And the thing that you stated, you know, fitness and eating healthy really go for every part of our lives, not just our heart health, but everything that we do. So important to just try to make a few changes to live a healthier life. We only go around once. So why not make it the best we can make it, right?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. And if anybody has any questions, they can go to the AtlantiCare site, I'm sure, and reach out to you or any of the other cardiac specialists on the team and get more information.
Great. Thank you so much, Robin. Yeah. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. I appreciate your time. Dr. Michael Link, and I'm going to read this, cardiac electrophysiologist, AtlantiCare Physician Group Cardiology. Make sure I have
well
that
done.
Right. Thank you.
You got it.
Thank you so much. I'm good to see you. And thank you for joining me today for Living Well with Robin Stoloff, empowering you to live a healthier life. Please subscribe and I'll keep you updated on my most recent episode. Until I see you next time, keep living well.